what happens is people will co-create a really bad resentment-inducing sexual relationship when they allow that sense of, I'll take anything, you know, something's better than nothing mentality, when in fact, no, that kind of something is worse than nothing.
Welcome to Conversations with Dr. Jennifer, a collection of interviews on the topics of relationships, sexuality, spirituality, and more, all featuring Dr. Finlayson Fife.
It's the Happy Families Podcast. It's the podcast for the time-poor parent who just wants answers now.
Hello, this is Dr. Justin Coulson. Welcome to the Happy Families Podcast. It's so good to be able to have a conversation today with Dr. Jennifer Finlayson Fife. Now, just before I introduce Jennifer and talk about her work, I do need to let you know that today's conversation is going to be about intimacy in adult relationships. Listener discretion is advised because we will be discussing themes of a sexual nature. So if you've got young ones in the car and you don't think they're quite ready for this conversation, have a listen a little bit later. Maybe sit down with your partner and put your headphones in and have a listen when the kids are not climbing all over you or sitting in the car and saying, what's that about? What are they talking about? Tell me more. Of course, maybe your kids are old enough and this would be a great conversation to have them join you in, but just getting the disclaimer out there. Now, Dr. Jennifer Finlayson Fife is somebody who I've been listening to on her podcast for, a long, long time. Jennifer is a relationship and sexuality educator and coach, as well as a licensed clinical professional counselor with a PhD in counseling psychology from Boston College. Jennifer and I share the same religious affiliation. This is not going to be a religious conversation at all. In fact, religion probably won't even come into it, but we do share the same religious affiliation, and her podcast definitely has some religious overtones. Nevertheless, when it comes to talking about sex and intimacy, there is literally nobody on the planet that I would rather listen to. And I've listened to podcasts and read books from a lot of people on this topic. Jennifer is wise. Her ideas are, I think, profoundly helpful. And when something came up on TikTok just recently, I thought, oh my goodness, I've always wanted to talk to Jennifer about anything intimacy related. And this is my chance. So Jennifer, welcome to the Happy Families Podcast. Thank you so much for honoring me with your presence. I'm just thrilled to have you here.
Thanks for having me. I'm very glad to be here.
We're going to start by me playing this TikTok, and then I want to ask you a couple of questions about it.
One of the things I really try to process now as a middle-aged man is the full extent to which I really thought that I was the main character. Well, let's give you an example. Early in our marriage, my partner and I, say we'd be going on a trip. My partner, at that point in time, would be doing the laundry, vacuuming the house, making sure the dishes were done. And I would literally think, well, yeah, but you don't have to do that. Like, that's you wanting to do that. It's not what I want to do. She would get everything ready, and eventually I would say, oh, now it's time to get ready. And I would go, and this is not a joke. This literally happened on more than one occasion. I would get, like, a backpack or a suitcase or something, and I would get my own clothes, and then I would get, like, two or three books that I wanted to read, and I would literally bring highlighters because I'm a nerd, and I think, I'm ready. I'm ready to go on the trip. Looking back, like, what? How can I possibly think that was okay? And the thing is, when we had kids, it didn't stop, right? My partner would do all the work to get all of them ready and make sure they were bathed, snacks packed, and I would get myself ready. And I think, oh, I saw my own father do this quite a bit, where he would take care of his own needs. So I know I didn't learn it from nowhere, but I also had to unlearn it because it never was okay. I thought that my role was to do all these things outside of the home and that the home was, you know, woman's domain. I saw that modeled and even taught as the way it should be, but oh my gosh, is that not partnership? And that sucks. So if you are a person, especially if you're a man and you think that division of labor is okay, like you shouldn't be married. Like you shouldn't be in a relationship. And I shouldn't have been at that point in time. And that would have made me so, so very mad. Because I was like, what more do you want from me? Turns out, quite a lot.
So Jennifer, this TikTok is very much about shared responsibilities in the home, cognitive load, domestic physical load. Before we talk about the intimacy stuff, when you hear Jay Fisher 62 on TikTok saying what he's saying, what's your instant response, your reaction as somebody who works with couples all the time? Like, is this a common issue?
Yes, it's a very, very common issue, especially when couples have been enculturated into different ideas about who's responsible for what. And a lot of couples who come from a traditional background or watch their own parents often internalize the idea that dad is the main show and mom is the backup staff, and that that's what it is to be a good man and a good woman. And in a time when men were the ones out in the workforce and women were rearing children in the home, I mean, I think some of that role ideology was valuable, perhaps, but, or at least more on point. But in our current culture, when people are shifting their notions of marriage to be more equal, companionate, more collaborative, I think that's a higher version of marriage, but one that requires often pushing into areas that they didn't see their parents' role model, and thinking about what does it mean for us to actually create something collaborative and fair. And it's often linked to good sexual relationships.
I want to dive into that in just a sec. But first of all, I wish Kylie was here to have this conversation with us, because she would be nodding her head and maybe even getting a little bit frustrated with me, because I mean, I think that I contribute pretty well around the house, but in deference to her not being here and imagining what she would say, when it comes to packing bags for a trip, which is the example that comes out of the TikTok, I'm really good at getting myself organized. And then I'm really good at shepherding children to rooms so that Kylie can do the work with them. And because we have six children, there's always another bag for me to pick up and go and stack into the rear of the car. And so I kind of feel like I'm fulfilling my duties by packing my stuff and then shoving all the bags into the car and doing the Tetris, the jigsaw puzzle. But my conscience was pricked a little bit as I listened to that, because I know that I've got a blind spot. Maybe it's not such a blind spot. I know that I'm definitely missing. I feel like I'm still contributing, but does it usually break down with a male-female gender split the way that he described it? Is it usually the guy who's, I guess, should I use the word loafing?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting. So it is often the guy that's loafing in this way. There's two different issues here. There is the issue of differences and role division and specialization within a family and a home. And sometimes it means that given specialization, one is going to do more of the load than the other.
Great. So I don't know where all the kids keep their clothes, because I'm not involved in the laundry. So it's just, it's inefficient for me to be in there trying to pack their clothes.
Exactly.
Okay.
And then there's the issue, which can be completely separate, of taking advantage of the other, or entitlement. And this isn't, it's not just men that take advantage or are entitled. Women can do it also. Okay. Humans are human after all, but there can be a way in which culturally we've been taught a certain kind of entitlement or over-functioning for women in some of these domains that just is plain unfair. And I think it's important to kind of make a distinction between what is separation of tasks and specialization versus one is actually working harder, doing more, carrying more of the load, and the other can just kind of act dumb and get away with it. Okay. And I see women do this too. Okay. In different domains sometimes, but it's never good to take advantage in a marriage. On the other hand, it's okay to recognize, look, this isn't my partner's strength. This is my strength, or vice versa. And, but you're doing what you can to truly carry the load and make sure no one is really, that you're not unequally yoked, ultimately.
I love this. You've made me feel a whole lot better about the decisions that I've made. I feel like my conscience is clear. Let's bring this into the intimate realm. Okay, so what do we see in terms of different approaches to intimacy in the bedroom? Somebody thinking that they're the main show, thinking that somebody, their partner is just there to satisfy and serve them. Is this a common issue? And what do we do about it if it's occurring in our relationship?
It's a pretty common issue in the population I work with, in part because of, again, going back to the way that many of us have been socialized. So some of the culture is this idea that, you know, men are the providers, going back to this kind of division of labor, and women are the supporters and the child rearers and so on. which can make it easy. This is outside of the intimacy realm for a moment, but it can make it easy to take advantage. You know, I've had a long day. She does the kids stuff. I'm just going to get my own bag packed. Okay. And so it's actually taking advantage, but the narratives you've inherited make it easy to do that. Another version of this that has been common for me, and it's some of the dissertation work that I did, is that men and women inherit ideas about what it is to be sexual and what makes sexuality legitimate. And this isn't just a religious idea. This can be in the culture at large, that men are naturally sexual and women are less so, right? And if a woman is going to not be cheated on, if a man is going to stay, she needs to produce sexually. She needs to satisfy his needs. And so I've had a lot of clients who had a parent, a mother, pull them aside on their wedding night, for example, and say, don't ever turn him down. Don't ever say no if you want to keep him around. Now, this is an idea that quickly kills what most people want in a marriage, which is to feel desired and a sense of passion, because it squarely puts sex in the realm of work for a woman. And it's the idea that his sexual desires matter more than my sexual desires. Knowing what he thinks and wants, he's the reference point in sex, not the two of us or what we collectively want or what would be mutually satisfying for the two of us. And so a lot of people have taught, yeah, around sex, the man is the main show and woman is there to satisfy his needs, back him up. But the problem, of course, is that desire breaks down very quickly when it's work rather than play, when it's a job to do rather than an expression of passion, desire, love, intimacy. And so we often, in that inequality, create the high and low desire tensions that a lot of couples come into my office trying to solve.
Hi, everyone. We will be hosting a Strengthening Your Relationship workshop in Irvine, California, January 22nd, 23rd, and 24th. This is a deep dive on how you tend to show up in your marriage in ways that are both instinctive and feel justified in the moment, but create a lot of turmoil and unhappiness in marriages. A lot of times we're just doing the best we can, but we don't realize that we're participating in a repeating pattern that makes us miserable, makes us feel divided from the relationship, and also often undermines how we feel about ourselves. And so in this 3-day workshop, I help couples better understand what's happening, why it's happening, what it is that they're doing to contribute to the unhappiness in the marriage, and what you can do to rise above it, to bring a stronger self to these important conversations, to be able to understand one another better, and to create solutions that you both feel good about. Often when we're struggling in the differences in our marriage, we do things that feel good, but that interfere with a genuine sense of connection and a genuine sense of being loved and happy together. And so it interferes with attraction. And so the Strengthening Your Relationship course is here to help you to understand what you're doing, what you can do differently to feel a more genuine ease with one another. So I hope you'll join me January 22nd, 23rd, and 24th in Irvine, California. And I hope to see you then.
On high and low desire, is it reasonable to say, certainly it's a cultural expectation, a societal expectation, that men will be high desire and women will be low desire? Now, to me, that's incredibly reductionist. There must be enormous overlap of distributions, but even as you age and mature, those there'd have to be a desire curve, right? It's higher at when you're younger and it drops off when you get older, or maybe different people peak at different times. Can you just talk about the difference? Sure. In desire trajectories and whether there is really a gendered breakdown or whether that is a societal thing?
I think it is a societal thing, but I also think it's a biological thing. And what I mean by that is I actually think women have as much, if not more, sexual capacity than men do, but they don't feel desire in the body as readily and as frequently as men do. men have a lot of testosterone, and testosterone is part of men's having what feel like spontaneous sexual thoughts more than women have what would be described as spontaneous sexual thought. However, women are erotic creatures. That is, that they are sensual and they are picking up on erotic cues in their environment. So women's bodies are responding and arousing more than people realize, but women are pickier about their sexuality. And there's a lot of psychobiological reasons for that, because it's more costly for a woman to be sexual, right? You get pregnant, and until recently, getting pregnant was often a death sentence, right? You then have to rear that child for 20 years. And so, meaning women were much slower to engage their, have been much slower to engage their sexuality because the cost to them is much higher. But when women determine that this is a good choice, right? I like this person. I like being close to him. I feel secure about my reproductive, meaning I either want to have a child and so I'm comfortable, or I don't want to have a child and I'm not going to get pregnant if I am sexual. Then women's desire can really skyrocket, and women can actually have much more sexual response than men. So that is, when a woman determines that this is a good place for her to be sexual, well, then she can have longer, more intense orgasm. She can orgasm multiple times, right? And so it's just that if you take the first 7 minutes, for example, okay, men can look like champs and women can look defective, but it masks the actual capacity and the environment in which women's sexuality thrives. And if you tell a woman her sexuality is there to back up a man, that is precisely antithetical to women's arousal patterns. Women do not want caregiving and sexuality to go together. And so when a woman's taking care of a man, it's more in the maternal frame, and that does not arouse her. If she is able to surrender into pleasure, take care of no one, allow herself to be taken care of, you know, to feel that she can be free there, free to be herself, to feel desirable and be confident in her own skin, well, then those are the conditions of high desire. But they're often the opposite of what many of us have been taught, right? Women have been taught, be selfless, right? Forsake yourself, forsake your desires. Don't wear that, cover up, don't do. And so a lot of the messaging is actually precisely what undermines the conditions in which women's sexuality thrives.
As you've spoken, Jennifer, I've made notes on about 17 different things that you're talking about that I want to follow all of these different threads. We don't have the capacity to follow them all, but I sense that there's a broader question that I wanted to ask you about a study that was conducted a number of years ago now, and it might bring in a lot of these threads together. So I'm going to monologue for about a minute and a half as I sort of explain what the study was and then try to bring the threads together into a cohesive direction for you to go down. Some years ago in the quite prestigious journal Nature, there was a study that showed that when people are attending to what they're doing, their well-being is higher than when their mind is on something else. So something that they're not doing. So for example, if I'm walking my dog, but I'm thinking about the long laundry list of all the things that I have to do when I get back to the office, I'm not going to enjoy the walk with the dog as much as I will if I'm just thinking about my walk with the dog. So I was running a presentation some years ago with a group of women in an all-girls school leadership group. I told them about that study and I said, if you would imagine, what do you think was at the top of the list? Like, what were the top five things that people are actually doing and they're thinking about them while they're doing? And so they guess things like eating. There's not a lot of evidence to suggest that we think about what we're eating when we're eating. We just kind of shovel the calories in. They talked about having conversation with friends. That was actually quite high on the list. But no matter how, I mean, this conversation went on for a good 5 minutes. They couldn't work out what the top couple of things were. And when I finally told them that intimacy, sexual intimacy, topped the list, that is, people are thinking about it while they're doing it, they were literally dumbfounded. So as I'm thinking about the things you're describing, the fact that eroticism is reduced when he thinks he's the main show, eroticism is also less likely to occur when she feels like she's there doing domestic duties to satisfy him. Yeah. And obviously this is very much a male-female context that we're describing with the male thinking he's the main show. I mean, we've set it up that way with the Jay Fisher 62 TikTok. Even hearing you talk about that first 7 minutes, sexually she's a failure in the first 7 minutes, whereas he's ready to say the party's over, like we're done. This was great. This spontaneous desire versus responsive desire that you've described, all of that feels like it fits well with the response that these women leaders in this all-girls school, it seems to me that helps to explain why they were so shocked. And and I guess what I'm curious about is, where do we go from here? How do we help anyone who's listening to this podcast to make sure that there's, number one, that there's more than 7 minutes, but number two, to make sure that when I tell people about a study like this and tell them that intimacy topped the list, that women respond with an enthusiastic, of course it tops the list. Where would it be other than at the top of the list?
Right. Yeah, so, I've got a couple thoughts. So first of all, I that's very interesting. So that the idea was, when we're being sexual, that we're thinking about being sexual, which is part of the pleasure, that we're in the moment. You know, we're not, if we're having good sex, thinking about the laundry list of things we need to be doing, or, you know, does he think I've put weight on my thighs? We're not getting anxious about things. We are in our own experience and enjoying that pleasure and that connection in that immediate sense when sex is good.
Exactly.
And right. And I think what might be the surprise in the audience was that I think a lot of women, because I do a lot of work with women themselves on, you know, I teach a course called The Art of Desire, because it's kind of antithetical to how many women have been taught. It's selfish if I let myself just move into my pleasure. I should be thinking about his feelings, his needs, his ego. Does he feel like a man? A lot of women will be like, I need to orgasm so he feels good. You see, and they put it into some kind of a pressured reality, which then means they're not in their experience. They're outside of their experience trying to get the experience to be the right experience, which is antithetical to the transcendence that's a part of really good sexuality. And so a lot of times women in particular need to understand the virtue of desire, the virtue of pleasure, of the ability to believe in your own worthiness enough to surrender into, in a way, being taken care of sexually. This is really when sexuality is working at its best in most heterosexual relationships. A man loves giving to his partner. That is part of his sexual pleasure, is to literally bless and love through his sexuality, though we're often not taught that idea.
How do you get past that that rush, or the 10 p.m. we're exhausted, let's just get it over with? I mean, you used the 7 minute example before, and I think that it's perfect here. I'm sure that there are a whole lot of couples who are out there where she rolls her eyes and says, okay, fine, get it done. And 7 minutes later, they're both sort of in the bathroom cleaning up and getting ready to hit the hay and get some sleep.
I think it's like one of the worst things you can do to your relationship. I really do.
Yeah.
Because it turns it into, I will tolerate you for 7 minutes. Men who feel tolerated often, they only take 2 minutes because the anxiety of feeling just tolerated, right? And you feel your wife resents your presence, doesn't really want you there. Your anxiety tends to be higher. Your sexual performance tends to be lower because of that anxiety. And you create resentment on both sides, right? The man resents, like, why? Why can't I, you know, I just want to have sex. I want to be with you. Why do you resent me so much? You know, also may feel anxious, or like, you know, what's the matter that my body is, I don't feel in control of my body's response. The woman feels resented because, you know what, sex isn't about me. You say you want to be with me, but obviously even when I'm checked out, you'll still move forward. So that's proof positive. It's not about me. And so what happens is people will co-create a really bad resentment-inducing sexual relationship when they allow that sense of, I'll take anything, you know, something's better than nothing mentality. When in fact, no, that kind of something is worse than nothing.
So many more questions for us to discuss as we talk about the secret life, the secret sex life of busy parents with Jennifer Finlayson Fife. Jennifer Finlayson Fife is a licensed clinical professional counselor, relationship and sexuality educator with a PhD in counseling psychology from Boston College. You can find more about her at Finlayson-Fife. That's Finlayson-Fife.com. Finlayson-Fife.com. We'll link to that in the show notes, as well as her two podcasts. The Happy Families Podcast is produced by Justin Rulon from Bridge Media. Craig Bruce is our executive producer. More next week on the Happy Families Podcast.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, we ask that you please rate, review, and share the podcast, so that more people can find and benefit from Dr. Jennifer's work.